I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What an introduction.
That means go.
Yeah, that's sign language for go. Makaton. Is it Makaton? Makaton, shall. Yeah.
Sign language.
Sorry?
Sign language.
Yeah, what kids do at nurseries and things, yeah.
I was talking about Wayne's World. Have you seen Wayne's World?
Years and years and years ago.
Like three.
It means nothing to me, that. Yeah. No. I see you've cut your hair again.
I have.
What does Emily think about it? The fact that you've got more hair on your chin than you have on your head. It looks like your head's upside down.
Chin?
Yeah. What does Emily think about it?
I don't know. She doesn't mind it so much. She
said,
they look like Bruce Willis in Die Hard 2.
So it's a bit special tonight. We've got our wives sat with us, haven't we? Charlotte's to my left.
Emily's to my straight in front of me.
Yeah, I like it. But we're back again. Another great guest, someone who we wanted on from the beginning, from a long time ago. We wanted to, I think when we went down to, when we did the London trip, I think we was originally supposed, was he supposed to come on then?
I think so, yeah. But as we say in the podcast, like, he's a busy bugger, isn't he?
He's literally in everything. It's just, you just put anything on and he's just there and he's in it, isn't he?
You're now two of the, like, most watched programmes that's on at the moment.
Which are both sick, by the way. Have you seen them both? Have you seen any of them?
Oh, I need to watch it. Like we say in this, I just don't have time to binge watch anything. So making our way through Normal People at the moment.
Normal People, yeah.
Yeah, so Danny's in...
Code 404.
404 and...
White Lines, which I'm on episode 8. Oh. So as soon as we stop this podcast, I'll be going back onto it. It's unbelievable. He's amazing. He's doing the Manchester accent as well, Danny.
Yeah,
it's really good.
When you said I'm on episode 8, did you hear what I said?
No.
I was like, oh, you're in it.
Oh no, God no. No. They won't have me. They won't have me. I'm not allowed in Ibiza anymore. I'm banned. I went to Ibiza in 2017, I'm not allowed back.
Imagine that call with your agent. Tomo, so they really want you for this part, but they've now they've moved filming from Cleethorpes to Ibiza, and
yeah.
You know you're not allowed back there.
Well, it happened to me, that, didn't it? It happened with me with the job that I won't mention any names, but when I was supposed to go to America, can you remember? And I got to the airport and the visa with the whole Esther things. Can you remember?
No.
No. Oh, well, I'll ring you after this and I'll explain, because I don't know if I'm allowed to mention it. But again, and not because of any criminal records, but it was because of a mistake. I wasn't allowed into the States, so I couldn't do a job, which was a bit of a nightmare. But I mean, Danny's traveling all over, and he's got White Lines has got Kel Spellman, who's been on the podcast before, who's also brilliant.
Yeah, man. I'm looking forward to watching it, to be honest. Just trying to binge watch as much as possible. But yeah, Danny, obviously you've worked with him on Swimming with Men.
Yeah, which was good fun. I mean, we touched base on it a little bit in the chat, but yeah, he's such just a joy to be around. He's like, he's quite like his personality is quite addictive. He's just funny. He's a bit like Joe Gilgan in his own way. He's just a bit like, just on his own planet and just sort of has a bit of fun, and he does a great Michael Jackson impersonation. He's he dances like Michael Jackson very, very well.
Nice.
Yeah, but he's so talented.
Yeah, he is. And like you say, you know, it shows because he never stops, does he? Which is brilliant.
Yeah.
But yeah, man. And his subject is flash cars.
Cars. Which I sort of agree with. I've never really been into flashy cars or anything. But again, I passed my test sort of 2 or 3 years ago, so I'm not really into you. Are
time yet?
Yeah, there is. Yeah, it's time for you to pass your test.
You're already playing golf. Your next midlife crisis will be a Ferrari, won't it?
Yeah, well, I can't afford Ferraris. It'll have to be like a, I don't know, what would I have? Like a, can you remember them old Ford Escorts convertibles and really fast ones? Maybe I'd have one of them.
And talking of haircuts before we get into the podcast, yours is looking good.
Yeah, Charlotte did it, mate. Yeah, she did it on, when did you do my hair, Charlotte? I want to say Tuesday, Wednesday, yeah. She'd never done it before. She's the first time she ever picked up some clippers. She just followed a video on YouTube and just went for it. Because I said to her, if you mess it up, it don't matter, I'll just shave it off. Yeah. And you know what? I've walked out of hairdressers with worse haircuts, genuinely. So,
good.
Happy with that.
Anyway, let's get on to the podcast.
Daniel
Mays. And again, guys, do stick around after the podcast. There is a little 5-minute debrief.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll hopefully tell you where next week's guest is as well, which will be fun.
Yeah. Also, just quickly, you might notice listening to the episode, there is a couple of technical difficulties in the sound. In there, so something to do with the Wi-Fi. Basically, Andy gets his Wi-Fi from Aldi, so it's not very good. So there's a little skips in audio. But other than that,
I used to get it from Lidl, but now I get it from Aldi. So it's
Netto connection. I love it.
couple of little twitches. If you're watching the video, it'll just jump a bit. If you're listening on audio, you'll hear that noticeable kind of little jib.
Jib.
We're doing what we can.
We're doing what we can.
A damn pandemic.
Exactly. Enjoy.
Enjoy.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Right, we're on.
We've got real-life Danny Mays, actual Danny Mays.
We've caught him.
Wait, is this isn't live now, is it? This is a pre-record.
No, not live. No.
All right, stand down. You
guys. How are you doing, mate?
I was going to bring in the dancers. I'm all right. Yeah, I'm. I say I'm all right. I, I'm you know, we were chatting just now, I'm sort of reached the peak, I think. I want to go back to work. And for the first time this week, I've started to feel a bit, not panicky is too strong a word, but I just, it's that feeling of it becoming the norm and not necessarily knowing where the outcome of this is. I mean, I'm thinking about my profession and eventually going back to work. So, yeah, I mean, I think I've had me fill of homeschooling, lads.
I guess it must be different for you as well, because like me and Tomo have had this conversation a few times. Like for us, it's starting to feel less normal now. But like the first couple of weeks, it was like, oh, it kind of just feels like I've finished a job, and I don't know what the next job is. But I mean, you're a busy bugger. You don't stop, do you? So does this feel like when you started out acting again, or
A little bit. I mean, I'd had a really great run of jobs recently, and then I'd finished something for ITV, and then I was having a bit of downtime, just sort of getting my life back a little bit. So when the sort of corona crisis hit, I was very much not working. So, but now I'm, what are we, 2 months down the line, and I'm just sort of itching to get back, like all of us, I guess.
Yeah, just like even like, obviously, you know, we're always itching to get on a stage or in front of a camera because it's what we love in it. But just to be around other people that aren't your kids or your wife would be nice.
As much as I dearly love my wife and kids, you know, you just need, it's just that thing of having your own space. And like you say, reconnecting with people. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's been absolutely amazing to have proper family time, because like you say, Andy, I've sort of been working a hell of a lot, so, and you know how all consuming that can become. So I've really enjoyed the closeness that we've found, and you know, I mean, I know I'm moaning about homeschooling, but you know, it's a really sort of valuable exercise to go through, and all that stuff. But it's just, yeah, I guess more for your own self to sort of, I didn't realise how much I missed acting until it was sort of taken away from me. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of part and parcel of who we are. So certainly for me. So I've really desperately missed that communication and sort of camaraderie that you naturally find on a film set or in a rehearsal room or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah. Particularly coming off the back of Code 404. Because you and Stephen have always said how much fun that was doing that. And you could tell by watching it. It was probably one of the only things that I've watched recently that it's actually made me laugh out loud. Like I was, and I don't know, I mean, it's brilliant, but because I know you so well and because I know Stephen so well, you sort of got that different connection with it. But I mean, the scenes, the bit on top of the car park was literally...
It was great. I mean, we just... you know, I mean, it's a perfect show to release in lockdown, isn't it? Because it's sort of, it's a bit silly, it's a bit slapstick, and so you can sort of switch your brain off and just sit back and enjoy it for like half an hour.
It was also made with real heart as well, like the relationship between you and your wife in it and stuff. It's so.
I've worked with Steve years ago on another comedy called Top Buzzer. So
I never realised you was in that. I've seen, because Perry Benson's in that as well.
Yeah, Perry's in it, and James Lance and Ashley Walters.
I've not seen that for years.
Yeah, I mean, that was such a scream all those years ago. I mean, it was the job that I met my wife on. Like, Stephen sort of got us together. It's all his fault. But I've always stayed in contact with Steve, but obviously he's so busy, isn't he? And he's so brilliant at what he does. So we've always connected with one another and said, if there's anything that sort of we can do together, you know, try and get it off the ground. And then Code 404 just fell into my lap. And I just immediately thought of Stephen, you know, because we'd worked so well together on Top Buzzer. And it was, so just to really get in the room with him again and have 5 weeks. We didn't stop laughing. I mean, it was, they've released the outtakes reel. And
love that.
Yeah, there's an extended outtakes reel of, I mean, we would literally put 20 minutes on each day because we were just creasing up the whole time. So, and it's, you know, I've done a lot of serious stuff, as have Stephen and Anna Max and Martin, who's in it as well. Yeah, so it's just great to just, you know, play in the comedy world. But there are moments in it that have great pathos and serious drama. And, you know, so, I mean, Stephen brings that tenfold, doesn't he? So for me, Code 404 for all its goofiness, it's really got a sort of, like you say, a lot of heart to it as well. It's a good relationship, love triangle thing going on with the wife character as well. So, but the response has been amazing. We're really, you know, it was just great. You know, your Twitter feed keeps going off with people just saying it's the funniest thing they've seen in years. So you can't say fairer than that.
Well, that means they must be making another one then, surely, because it is left open for another one.
Oh, I can't possibly give you that piece of information on your podcast. I'm going to make an announcement shortly, but I think the numbers are great. So, and the reviews have been good. So we'll wait and see. I mean, I think unanimously we all, you know, would love to do another series. And obviously where it ends, it sort of leaves the door open.
Yeah. You need to schedule that around Swimming with Men 2, though.
You're going to have to dig out those trunks again, aren't you, Tomo?
That was good fun, wasn't it?
In the closet there somewhere.
That was good fun, wasn't it?
Oh, it was great, yeah. I mean, when are we ever going to do a film like that ever again, unless there is a sequel? I mean, I was talking to, who was it, Gabby Roslin. I did an interview with her for a radio show, and she brought it up, and I mean, as soon as you sort of mentioned that film, I immediately just think how knackering it all was. I mean, it sounds like a whole lot of fun, doesn't it? A male synchronized swimming drama.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I'll have a bit of that. And the cast were great, Tomo and Rob Brydon and Rupert Graves. I think, yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. Yeah, yeah. And can you swim? Yeah, yeah, can swim. Did a little swim test.
That first training session that we did.
Yeah. Then we get to the first day of training at the Olympic swimming pool. Fuck me. I was absolutely knackered by the end of it. I can't do this for another 6-7 weeks.
Yeah, it was hard work. And then when we went back and did the comic relief thing, didn't we? I think we had, what do we have? Sort of like 6 months away from swimming to then go back and do another routine. It was knackering, mate.
It was literally thrown into the deep end. And like on that first day, it was like, right, okay, I'll grab Tomo's leg. Adil's shoulder, and it was that thing of, do you remember, we're all in the changing room, we're all getting undressed, it was all revealing, and then we're all sort of jumped in the swimming pool and we're grabbing each other's bodies, and I thought, this is just so weird. But it really did immediately sort of bond us together, didn't it?
Yeah, there was no sort of uncomfortableness, was there?
No.
I never thought that I'd be doing the wilting flower with Uncle Bryn. From Gabby. I never thought that had ever happened, but no, that was great. That was good.
I mean, it was hard work, wasn't it? And Adele, who was our swim captain, was amazing with us. And lovely, lovely experience. Great times.
Yeah, it was. But so obviously, as the listeners know, this is probably the most interview form that we've ever done at the start of a chat, really, isn't it? This is probably the most work chat that we've ever had on the podcast. But what we do is we get our guests to come on with a subject that they feel is overrated, so we can have a bit of a talking point. And you was texting me last night, weren't you, and saying about what your subject was, if you want to tell us what it was.
It was a weird, it's such a difficult question in many ways to answer. I thought, what can I come up with, or what springs to mind? And the first, not necessarily fast, but sort of flashy, expensive cars are something that I think is overrated. And I'm thinking, why did that pop into my head? Because way back when I first passed my driving test at 17, I was really into nice cars. And I would, you know, you'd see a Ferrari drive past, Tesla Rossa or something like that. So I was really into it. But when I passed my driving test, the car that I, my first car was a Mini Cooper. It was a red, it was a 1.3i injection Mini Cooper. The right. Classic shape.
The
Mr. Bean.
Exactly that. And I sort of...
You noticed how I went Italian job and he went Mr. Bean.
Yeah. That was my dream car. As soon as I saw it, I fell in love with it, and I think I found it in the auto trader or something like that, or a private buyer or something. And I said, this is what I'm going to get as my first car. And then my dad went, no way are you getting a 1.3i injection Mini Cooper for your first car. I said, what are you talking about? Now, listen to me, boy, he said. when you pass your driving test, you only learn how to drive. He said, that's the first stage. You learn how to drive within the first 6 months of passing your driving test.
They teach you how to pass your test. You teach yourself how to drive. That's what
they're saying. Yeah. He says, it's a completely different ball game, you know, when you're on the open road and you're on your own. And I said, no. But he said, you just want to get a banger, because I guarantee you, you're going to have an accident. You're going to, you know, you're going to. I said, no, it's absolutely fine. It's absolutely fine. I don't know why I've gone into this anecdote straight away. I'm talking about flashy.
Well, I like it.
But I sort of, for me, it was a kind of flashy, you know, look at me sort of motor, right? And then literally, I was dropping a friend off 6 months later, and I got lost on my way home. I was looking, and I'll never forget it, the sign on the road was, the light wasn't working on it or something. And I was like, is that Chink? Does that say Chinkford? Does that? And I looked up and I'd gone straight for a crossing. The red lights of the traffic lights just flashed past me. And I'd gone straight for a red light and bounced off a Rover. It was terrible. Spun the car, wrote the car off. I felt like I'd blacked out. And all I could remember when I came round was, if you're looking for faster love. George Michael was on the radio. So whenever I hear that song, I'm like, no, it takes me back. And I sort of, it felt like I'd sort of, I completely spun the car around, then it mounted the curb. And that was the other thing that my dad said to me. He said, whatever you do, you're not buying a Mini, because they are notoriously terrible if, you know, you're in Paris. It's like you're in a little box. Because it was like a little go-kart driving around. It was a really nippy little thing. And then I wrote the car off, and I looked in the rearview mirror when I had the accident, and this front of this green Rover had completely caved in. And there was an elderly guy just sort of looked like he was completely out of it. And I thought, it was just panic stations. I jumped out, I ran to the car. And all of a sudden, he sort of came round, and he was this Irish guy, and he started swearing at me. And I was like, I've never been so thankful that someone had started swearing and cursing at me. He was like, you little fucker, you fucking little. And I was like, are you all right? You all right? Anyway, cut a long story short, I phoned my dad. I said, listen, I've had an accident. And he got on his white van and he drove up. And I was, I'll never forget, I was sitting on the edge of the curb like this. And I was, you know, I was distraught. My first beautiful Mini Cooper car was a write-off, and he just walked up to me and he looks at the car and he went, what have you done?
You guys...
Good, because I think just as I've got older, I think I'm much more into the mindset of if it's practical. I've got two kids, and if it gets me to A to B in a safe, secure way, it sort of does the trick for me. Do you know what I mean?
That's what it's all about. You've got a cash cow, haven't you? And?
I've got what? A cash guy? No, a T-Roc now. I've got a new one.
Oh.
So similar kind of thing, just like a slightly biggish family car. But yeah, because I'm exactly the same as you, mate. Like, I don't drive, admittedly. My missus does the driving. But I remember being a kid and looking at, like you say, Ferraris going past or something and being like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I used to really love Lotus. Is it Lotus Elises?
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
Like, as you kind of get older, I guess it's kind of like, it's just practicality, isn't it? I couldn't imagine, you know, having even like a little Audi A3, little nippy thing like that, like putting like the kids in the back of that. It's just sometimes a bit cramp, aren't they?
Yeah. No, I've actually driven a Ferrari. I did an episode, just popped into my head. I did an episode of Hustle. That show? And I was at this... like wannabe Alan Sugar entrepreneur, and I had to drive a Ferrari F40, is it? And it was like, we filmed it in Birmingham.
All right. Okay.
And they got me behind this Ferrari, and I'd given it a little test ride. But I'm telling you, it is so low to the ground. I was just like, I couldn't even get in and out of the bloody thing. I was just like, it wasn't particularly comfortable, but my God, you could feel the power as soon as you put your foot down. But whenever I see like Top Gear or shows like that, when they are in these amazing supercars and they open it up, but they're on a test track, and I always look at it and think, yeah, if you have one of them, when and where are you ever going to drive it like that?
Particularly if you live in London. If you live in central London, why would you have a Bugatti Veyron or whatever that are a million quid?
Yeah.
Because well, you're going to get a cyclist that's going to clatter into the back of you. And then they're not insured. And then next thing, you've got a five grand...
This is the other reason why I've got a beaten up cash guy is because our street, I've got no driveway. We live on a, you know, that you've got to park your car on the street. It's a bit of a nightmare, my street, in terms of parking and things like that. But, you know, we're in the middle of London. We're always getting nicks. And I mean, I've reversed the car and the neighbour's got one of those tyres on the back and I've done a dent in the car. And it's just like, after a while, you just think,
what's the point?
What's the point?
Yeah, in London, there's no point, is there? But no. Just going back to what your dad said about your first car, I don't know if that's a dad's thing. Like, no matter what car you think about buying for your first car, because my dad did exactly the same. I bought an Audi A3 for my first one. It was an older one.
Right, yeah.
But as soon as I got to the garage and I said to my dad, I said, that's the one. He was like, nah. You don't need that. What do you need that for? And I was like, it's just what I really, really want. Because my mate had one and I remember he used to drive me to London quite a lot. And I remember, I don't know what it was, but because we'd done a lot of road trips in this nice Audi and it was quite quick and it was nice to look at. And I thought that's what I wanted. And my dad straight away was like, no, you're not having that. But I bought it anyway. And within 6 weeks, I needed to take it into the garage. And because it was an Audi S-Line thing, it was, instead of it being £200 to fix, it was £1,200 to fix. And instead of paying, I don't know, 40 quid for a new tyre, for an Astra, you're paying 100 quid for a new tyre because it's an Audi. And I think just with all these expensive cars that you pay a lot of money for, there's also the upkeep of them that are just twice as much as there would be if you was to buy like an Astra or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
It is the most amazing feeling in the world, though. One of the moments in your life when you first pass your driving test, isn't it?
Yeah, it was great.
Don't drive?
No.
I've
done a few lessons and stuff in the past, and I booked my test. And the day that I booked my test, I started filming. I think it might have been This Is England 90. So one of them was like, oh, I'll do it again. And then my first little girl was born, and then I've just never... I live literally... There's a tram stop there. Literally, I can see it.
Yeah.
Really.
But Andy, say if you get a part and you've got to drive or something like that, I mean, how does that work out?
Stunt doubles, mostly.
Stunt double, yeah.
It's workaroundable, isn't it, I guess. I need to get it done. I can drive. Drove a bit, not... You know, shouldn't have, but I have done a bit. But
I always said, like, if you live in a city, like, there's no point. Like, I it's very rare that I will drive to London, and if I do drive to London, I drive to Chingford, and I'll park in Chingford, and then I'll get the tube into the city centre.
How come you chose Chingford though? That's quite near where I used to grow up.
It started as Epping. I just kind of looked at the top of it because
Definitely over my neck of the woods there.
Yeah. Well, is it Central Line that goes to Epping?
Yeah.
I thought, well, I can go to Epping and then I can park around there for free, and then I can get on the Central Line straight into the city centre, and it's getting easier.
I've had my fair share of waking up at the end of the Central Line at Epping in my misspent youth. When you're like, oh no, not here again. Take you back.
But I think in London and places like Manchester, there's no point in driving. I get, like, for me, because Grimsby's kind of like out of the way of everywhere. Say if I need to go and do like a voiceover or whatever, the chances are if I'd have to drive to Manchester or go to London and things like that. So I guess it's just easy, particularly if you've got kids.
I mean, the thing is now with everything that's happening, I think everyone's going to be on bikes, right, in London. I mean, it's sort of, no one's on public transport. Well, people are. I know they've said that people can go back to work, but I'm not sure how, you know, safe that is. So it feels like there'll be a much more dependency on, you know, walking and getting, you know, using your bike and all that stuff.
Everyone's using a bike, I think, particularly in London. If you've got a push bike, like Rupert Graves, who me and you worked with on Swimming With Men, he used to cycle to work every morning, didn't he?
He was on his bike the whole time, wasn't he? Yeah. He was just quite guilty of getting
Uber. The biggest legs you've ever seen.
What, Rupert?
Yeah, because he just used to cycle everywhere.
That's a brave production company, isn't it, right? I mean, I've done jobs in London where, you know, they want to pick you up at 5 in the morning to be there at 9. And I've been like, I'll just get the tube at 8. And they don't so letting him ride in on his bike, that's...
Maybe it was a deal breaker for him.
Yeah. I've just bought some bikes. Right. I'd love it. Do you imagine?
Well, like a proper road bike, Tom.
No, I just bought a mountain bike.
Yeah.
But it's got the nice big thick tyres, so it's easy to get around. But me and Charlotte, we did nearly 30 miles last week. We cycled.
Yeah.
And I think if you're in central London, you can get anywhere you need to be on a bike quick enough.
Yeah.
Do you know what?
Hold on, you did 30 miles in 1 hour?
No. You're allowed more than 1 hour exercise now. It was yesterday.
Oh, yeah, you said it was a couple of weeks ago, though, Tom. I won't say anything, don't worry about it.
But I was out in the countryside.
But, All right.
Well, no, I enjoy cycling. I don't mind it. And I guess, like, how old was you when you passed your test, Dan? Was you
17? I passed first time, yeah. It was just like that when she said those words, just like to congratulate you, passed your test. It's just like a moment of absolute euphoria, isn't it? Because you suddenly, I mean, as soon as you get your wheels, it's that sort of sense of freedom, isn't it? You're mobile, you can go out and discover the world a little bit.
Did you pass the test?
Then go for a red light and write your car off.
Was it a first time pass for you, Dan? Did you pass?
Yeah, first time. And I didn't, I was way back then, you didn't have to do the, you have to do a theory test now, don't you? You have to go and, so there's a lot more. I didn't think I did anything like that. It was the parallel park and the emergency stop and all that stuff.
Wow. Yeah. I found the practical test a lot harder than the theory.
Is it multiple choice questions?
Yeah. And then you've got a hazard perception. So you've got to, on the screen, there's like a scenario that's happening. Computer made scenario. So say like, you'll be driving down the road in a simulator and then someone will come to a crossing. So you've got to click when you see the hazard.
Right.
But you can't click too many times, otherwise it gives you an instant fail. So it's kind of like, you've got to click it when you see it. But I found the theory test bit a lot easier than I did the practical, but it took me four times to pass.
Oh, did it? Yeah.
It took me four times. Yeah.
So but did you ever fail on the theory?
No, I did that twice and passed first time, both times like that. But I did two tests when I was 18, failed them both. And then kind of thought, oh, actually, I'm 18, 19 now. I'm going to be out most weekends. I'm going to be out on the piss a lot. So it's probably a good idea that I don't get my car. So I never did that until I think I was 25 when I passed, and then I did another two when I was 25. So I've only been driving for three years now.
Right. And,
it does. It gives you that sense of freedom, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've done one of the theory thing you were talking about. I've done the speed awareness test thing because I got done for speeding and got too many points. And that's a relatively new thing, is it? That's come in now. You have to go to a...
Yeah, the speed.
You can either take the points or go to a speed awareness course. And I was like, obviously, I'll do that. So you have to rock up.
I was going to say, what was that like?
It was strange. I had to rock up in a hotel in London somewhere near Swiss Cottage with all these other people. And there was a load of us. It was about 30 people in a room. And you watch a screen and it's like a sort of mock scenario. And you have, you know, multiple choice questions of when to hit the button. I guess it helps, you know, if you have an awareness of it, you know.
Mm. Yeah, but sometimes you speed by accident, don't you? Just kind of like...
Yeah, but I mean, in London now, there are so many speed cameras now. There's, you know, and on motorways, isn't it? You're being watched all the time, so
yeah.
It's a tricky one, isn't it?
Yeah, Charlotte really enjoyed. She called it speeding school.
Speed. Right.
She really enjoyed her speed awareness course. She came back from it because she was the same. She got caught doing, I think it was 72 in a 60 because there was there was roadworks or something like that. That she
was listening to Michael Jackson's Speed Demon at the time.
She's a rule breaker. But she got caught speeding near Doncaster somewhere, so she had to go to the nearest place where she got caught speeding to do her awareness course. But yeah, she came back from it and she loved it. She really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe for a few weeks afterwards you have an awareness of it a lot more, but then it sort of seems to sort of drifts out of your head, you know?
Yeah.
And you're back to flooring it.
So when you crashed the Mini then, Danny, did you look at another fast car? Have you had a decent sort of fast car since before?
No, I haven't. I mean, it's just been a progression of quite normal, basic. I had a Corsa, an Astra, and now a Qashqai. So it's a sort of, I mean, we were even thinking of maybe getting a Volvo. I mean, I've got to that stage in my life.
Volvo's 2.4 nice.
Children with a Volvo because they're just so practical and, you know, well-made and things like that. So it's a lot. It's all about practicality now at this stage in my life.
Those new Volvos, I mean, I don't know,
maybe one, eh?
Those new Volvos drive themselves. So you can get them, they drive themselves now, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and they park themselves and all that.
Yeah, they do all that stuff, yeah. So you don't need to do anything.
It's crazy, isn't it? All that new technology that comes in.
Well, see, I mean, for me, this is part of my kind of, like, conundrum, because, like, I'm at an age now, like you say, where I should really drive, because then it can at least help the missus out with the kids, and especially now with all that's going on.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to also is relying on car bikes and walking. Like, you are going to be relying on your car a bit more.
But yeah.
My other thing is, I'm kind of like, all right, I should learn to drive now. But then I keep hearing, like, frigging Elon Musk saying that there's going to be driverless cars in the next 5 years. So I'm kind of like, yeah. What's the point? Do you know what I mean?
I guess there'll be electric cars a lot more, won't they? That's the new thing that's obviously coming in that the market is being saturated with. But maybe you're right. I mean, you've got, you know, cabs and Uber services and even black cabs. You can phone, everything's on your phone now, isn't it? So
yeah,
I mean, I'm jumping around in Uber cabs all the time, and if I've got an audition or a voiceover or something like that, it's just so convenient.
That's
how I do it.
Yeah, Uber's brilliant, really. I mean, we haven't got it in Grimsby, but say that I was on it. No, we haven't got Uber. But the job I was on in Manchester, I mean, it's just so handy. But there's a big problem with Uber drivers in London, isn't there? With the black cabbies, because black cabbies they went to, like, I don't know, cab school for like 5 years.
All the black cab drivers watching this podcast, they'll be a bit of the army, won't they? But I mean, they all obviously spend time doing the knowledge, don't they, and things like that. But the thing is, they're just priced out the market.
How easy it is now to get an Uber. It's literally, you go on your phone and go bosh, and then there's a Uber.
I did have a weird. I was doing a play at the National, and I would get an Uber cab home from there every night. And I think I was relatively new to it, and I'd made a mistake where, you know, you could do like a pool share thing.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what it's called?
Who did you have
I just remembered that. It's a story. It was what was it? I was going home. There's two stories. I was going home one time, and I was inadvertently found myself in a pool share thing. So I was in the cab in my own, and I was going back. And then the guy says, oh, I've got to stop off and pick up this other, you know, pickup. And I was like, well, what are you talking about? He went, no, you're in a pool share. We've got to do this now. So it's on your way home. I went, oh, all right, okay, fine. We've only picked up these four party girls like this. And they'd been drinking in their flat, and they were rat's ass. They were like, it was like party time and thing, right? Then Lou rings me on my mobile. And I'm like, oh, my God. Can you imagine that? Yeah, no, who's that in the background? No, nothing. Don't worry about it. So that was that one time. I just kept, there's nothing to be, you know, it's all fine. And I just kept getting it wrong. And then I found myself on another pool share thing. And he took me to the wrong place or something like that. And he couldn't know, that was it. I was in the cab and we were going to pick someone up, and they couldn't find the, he couldn't find the address of this person, or he couldn't find the fare, and it was like, it was all getting a bit heated. And I went, look, they're not here. Let's just go anyway. Then he got lost. Then we actually ended up pulling in. And then it was just like, I said, look, we were passing Euston, and I was like, there's a black taxi rank. I said, pull into the taxi rank and let me get out so I can get a black cab. And it got into this massive argument with me and the Uber cab driver, right? We pulled into a black taxi rank in an Uber. And then he said, and then he locked the doors and he wouldn't let me out. And it got really fucking heated to the point where I was like, right, so you're now not letting me out of your, and it was not pretty at all. And we got into a bad argument and eventually let me go out. But it was just like, fucking hell, I was like trapped in this guy's Uber. Jeez, not good.
Some of the characters you get as the Uber drivers.
Yeah.
Some of them are so funny, but there's a lot of stories nowadays where, did you hear about that one girl who, she was on the way home from a party in London and she'd fallen asleep in the Uber.
Yeah.
And he'd taken her all the way around London, took her miles out of the way, charged her, I don't know, 70 quid. And she looked on the route that he'd taken and it was all the way around. But like, surely they must know that they're all on GPS, so they know what route's been taken.
Yeah, there was that huge issue, weren't there, with their licensing laws. I don't know if that's all still going through or...
I'm not sure what happened with that, because it kind of just disappeared out of the news.
It has just disappeared off the radar, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because it is very different over here. Have you ever used, like, Uber or Lyft in, like, the States? Because it's quite strange there, because anyone can be your driver there, can't they?
Right, yeah. I've not been out to LA for a while. I wouldn't have that. I've not had that problem.
It's like we had like we went on our honeymoon literally every time we had a driver, it was like, oh yeah, I'm a university student. Oh yeah, I'm a doctor part time, and I do this kind of and it's like, whoa, like,
yeah,
you know. So anyone can just download an app and be like, I'll give you a lift.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's kind of what Uber and Lyft was like kind of made for. It was like this part of like the gig economy, like you can do it in your spare time to earn a better.
Oh, that's quite good then, isn't it?
Have a license. It is, but then obviously the dark side of that is you don't know who the fuck's car you're getting into. So I think over here, you have to have a taxi license, don't you, over here, which is the right way to do it.
I remember I've not been out to LA for a long time, but you know that, you know, actors going out there to audition. I mean, I did that years back when I did a job there and I stayed on doing auditions and things, and I don't think Uber was operating then. So I got me hire car. It was just like... the freeways in LA when you're driving is just like a free-for-all. It's just absolutely...
Really?
It's terrifying because you've got like... 5 lanes of traffic and they're all just going 100 miles an hour and it's just like Mario Kart. You're like, where am I going? And it's just like, and I would be following this sat nav all the way to go all the way over to Burbank over the other side of the city to try and go to an audition. And you'd be like absolutely petrified driving there. And Ben Whishaw, you know that actor Ben Whishaw, said when he was in LA, it was like, if I kept following the sat nav, eventually it will get me to the place. Do you know what I mean? If you keep turning right, that's what he says, eventually I'll end up at my destination. But I guess now if you went over there, you could get Ubers everywhere. It'd be a lot easier, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I guess so.
You would be a quivering ball of mess when you walk into your audition.
It's funny you say that about driving in LA, though, because I was Googling it last night because I was texting Andy last night. Me and Charlotte, we're going to go to LA and we're going to go to Vegas, but we're going to drive over there. We went to Miami for our honeymoon. We hired a car there and drove around Miami. And the worst time to drive in Miami that we found on the freeway was at like 1 a.m. We drove to a place called Key West, which is basically a motorway in the middle of the ocean. So literally just one road or one lane on either side. And you drive for like 4 hours through the ocean. And it's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Wow. No, I've never done Miami. It's an amazing place.
Oh, it's probably my favourite place I've ever been. It's beautiful. Wow.
Did you go there on your honeymoon then, Tomo?
Yeah. So we did. I think we only did about 5 days there. Then we went to Mexico for a bit. But just going back to the driving thing, we found that the worst time to drive was late at night. Throughout the day, it was fine.
Right. And
driving at night. But we was looking at driving through LA. But now you've just told me that, it's made me think, oh.
No. I mean, maybe I was just a panic neurotic. Because when I was out, and our son was, he was young, you know what I mean? So he was in the back seat and Lou was in the passenger seat. And it was just like so much driving out there. That's all I remember, you know. And the traffic, certain points in the day, the traffic on the freeways and things is an absolute nightmare. So you'd spend half the day in your car driving about.
Who's the go-to driver out of you and Lou? Say if you popped out somewhere, who would you go to get in the driving team?
We pretty much share it, really. She doesn't really drink, though, Lou, so she's always she's always the designated driver on a night out. Everyone's the winner. but we sort of share it out, yeah. She's a terrible... The other thing about... Because I had that accident, you know, which could have been horrendous. I mean, thankfully... Everyone was okay, apart from my Mini Cooper. But I do tend to be, if I'm in the passenger seat, I'm a very nervous driver.
Oh, really?
Ah. I'm a little bit like, I always tend to sit in the back because it's that thing of, I just remember that impact of, it happened so quickly, the lights went back, and all I could do, it was just a natural instinct to curl myself up into the smallest ball possible because I knew I was going to hit this car head on. So it was, if a car comes out and I'm in the passenger, because I'm not in control of the car myself, I just get very twitchy.
Yeah, I think particularly, like, driving in London is so, like, there's just no etiquette. I think if a London driver, if someone that was, who was, I don't know, say a black cabbie came to Grimsby and drove the way that he drives in London.
Yeah.
He's going to get beat up. He'll stop at a red light and someone will get out and beat him up because they'll pull out and they're all like honking all the time. And it's like, when you get to Grimsby, it's just so chilled.
Yeah.
Everyone's like letting people go and da da da. Whereas in London,
well, you always have so much beef between drivers and cyclists. That's the other issue in London. You know, I mean, I was doing a play at the Donmar Warehouse years back, and I decided I'm just going to cycle in, which was great. You know, it was a beautiful cycle in every morning because it's pretty much downhill from East Finchley, where I live, into the centre of town. So you get this amazing view.
It's all right going to work, but what about getting home from work?
That was the problem. So I cycle in. And you'd see arguments with drivers and cyclists. You'd even get people having a go at you if you were cutting corners or, you know, I mean, the thing is to never go up the inside of a lorry and things, all that sort of, those rules you have to take on board. But, yeah, it was the cycle back after you've done a two-show day and you've had a couple of jars in the bar and you've got to drive. So I said, I haven't thought this through, have I? But it does, man. It wakes you up. I mean, I remember walking into rehearsals when I was doing that and I was wide awake, and it's a proper nice workout, isn't it, to start the day?
Yeah, it's good. It's when you get started, when we did our long bike ride, we literally started and we was like, we'll just go here, and then you get to there and then like, oh, we'll just go there. And then before you know it, you've covered so many miles, and then you get back and it's just like, it's somehow you've cycled all the miles, but then you find that you've got more energy. But I think that's the thing with exercise as well, isn't it? It
releases. Well, I think cycling also, it just takes you back to being a kid again, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, when I was a kid in Buckhurst Hill, I mean, I was out on my BMX Amoco bike with my best mate, Matt Farr, and we would literally, you know, Epping Forest, we'd be out the whole day. Sounds like proper jumpers for goalpost things, doesn't it? But it was that. It was on the BMX. I'd come back for my lunch and then I'd be out again, come back for dinner. My mum and dad never saw anything of me. We were just always out and about.
That's the thing. I used to cycle to school in the morning, which I worked out the other day, which was like 4 miles, and then I'd do my day at school, then I'd cycle 4 miles home, and then I'd go back out on my bike with all the lads, and then, you know, we'd go, I'd put it on the floor and I'd use my bike as a goalpost, like you said, and we'd be playing football. And then and then on the weekend we'd just be playing football all day, and then we'd be out on our bikes at night, and it's like, all we ever did when we was kids is exercise. Whereas now it's like, you're lucky to get me doing an hour's worth of exercise a day.
Well, it's very important. The steepest hill in Buckhurst Hill where I grew up was Stradbrook Grove. It's a very, very steep hill. And myself and Matthew used to always go down that hill, no hands. That was our thing. We go all the way down, no hands. All the time. And then one day the phone went, and my mum, and she says, and Matthew's mum, Rita, was on the phone. She said, Matthew's had an accident. I shouldn't laugh. I said, what do you mean? He said, he's come off going down Stradbrook Grove. He went down Stradbrook Grove on his own without me there. And he come off right halfway down, that got tangled under the bike. And I always remember going to see him. He was in a right mess. Well, I had a problem in my head. But yeah, if you're going to do shit like that, have your mate with you. Let me tell you.
Yeah, and wear a lid.
Yeah,
we
never
used
helmets or anything. No.
Oh, did you ever? Was that ever a thing for you when you were younger as well, or now? Like a lot of people, motorbikes. Have they? Because that kind of comes hand in hand, doesn't it? Sometimes with flashy cars, you know, people who want a Harley Davidson or they want like a super bike or something like that. Has that ever appealed to you?
Well, I mean, I've got a hybrid bike at the moment. It sounds like a bit like your one, Tomo. It's sort of mixed between a road bike and a mountain bike. But I think you get, I don't know, I'm sort of toying with that idea of maybe buying like a proper, you know, road bike thing and getting more into, because me and Milo still, my son, we still go on bike rides now. You know, we'll go up to Ali Pali and there's little bike routes you can go on. There's the disused railway line that goes all the way down to Finsbury Park. We do that sometimes. But, road biking, cycling, that's really, you know, it's massive now, isn't it? I mean, you just see all these. So maybe in a couple of years from now, I'm going to be one of those lycra-clad boy racers, aren't I, on a superbike thing, yeah.
On Facebook so everyone can see where you've been.
Is that yours? Was that a dig at me, that, mate? What Andy was just saying, what about motorbikes? Have you ever been into motorbikes?
Oh, no. That's never been my...
Have you ever ridden one? Have you ever ridden a motorbike?
No, the only motorbike I ever got on was in the movie Made in Dagenham. And it was, he loved his motorbikes, the character in that, as I remember. And he had a motorbike with a sidecar. I'd never been on a motorbike. Like you, Andy, they would get a stunt double. And the only bit I had to do was on the Gascoigne estate in Barking, somewhere like that. And I just had to get on the bike, and they said they took me through it. And I just literally had to just cycle it or drive it forward a few feet and then stop. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. I've put it right up. God knows what I'd done, and I just took off on this.
It was a weird one.
I couldn't stay. Thankfully, nothing happened badly, but. It was hilarious. I didn't want to do that again. But it's always, I always felt with motorbikes and things like that, even if you did come off, there's no roll cage or anything like that. You're just so exposed, aren't you?
No, they're a dangerous game, motorbikes.
Because you used to ride them when you was younger, didn't you, T?
Yeah, I used to like motorbikes a lot, yeah, when I was a kid. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there was never mind. So the less we say about that, the better. No, but I remember the most scary motorbike experience I ever had was I was staying at Shane Meadows' house and Andrew Shim was around and we was playing a lot of computer games and I ended up and we was betting like a fiver a game on the, I think it was Need for Speed, and in the end I ended up taking sort of 45 quid off Shimmy, Andrew Shim.
He
hates handing money over at the best of times. He hates it. So he's got this little 15-year-old kid that's going, yeah, you owe me 50 quid, you crap on FIFA. And then in the end, they hadn't decided how I was going to get back to Grimsby. So Shane was like, oh, you take him, Shim. And Shim was like, no, I've only got my motorbike. And Shim was like, okay, all right, I'll take him then. So I made Shimmy, I got on the back of Shimmy's, I think it was an R1.
Yeah.
And we drove from Nottingham to Grimsby on the back of this motorbike on the motorway. And it was the scariest experience I've ever had in my entire life.
Right, yeah.
It was ridiculous because Andrew Shim's like, he's really, really good at riding. He rides them professionally.
Yeah.
So I think that sort of put me off ever wanting to get a motorbike because of the sheer power that them things have got. And I was only 16, but shitting myself.
I did have to get on one of those taxi bike once. That's also popular.
Yeah, in London. Yeah, they're fun.
I had to get... from set to a screening, and the production company put it on, and this geezer just went, right, here's your helmet, and you're wired up to the radio so he can talk to you, right?
But they're big cheers, aren't they? They're quite comfortable, them things.
But I was having to hold on to him, but my God, he took off, this fella. He was sliding in and out of the traffic. I was just like, oh, thank God I just got there in one piece. But
I had to go all the way from King's Cross to Elstree on the back of one of those things. And fucking hell. They're just whipping in and out of traffic and stuff. Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, you just want to get there in one piece. So, like, do you know what? I wouldn't mind being half an hour late if I've still got all my limbs, thank you.
Wicked, man. Well, I think that's that pretty much wraps us up, Danny. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, listen, lads, it was lovely chatting with you and to see your faces again. You know what I mean? It's sort of because I know we worked together years back, didn't we, Andy? On
Common, wasn't it? Yeah.
Common, that's it.
Oh, did you two work together?
Yeah, I killed Danny's son in summer.
Oh, you did, didn't you? Yeah, yeah. Wow. You were wonderful in that ending. Fantastic, mate.
You, man, you turned. Oh, thank you, mate. It means a lot.
It's another cheering piece, wasn't it?
It was what?
How did you kill Danny's son? I want to know how you did it. In common, obviously.
It was a program. It was about a law, joint enterprise law.
Yeah, common law, yeah.
Yeah, common law. So it was basically me and a couple of mates were in a takeaway.
In a takeaway, yeah, I remember that. I ended up
killing Danny's son in it, but then the whole group
was Jimmy McGovern?
Jimmy McGovern.
Yeah.
Brilliant. All right, you're wonderful in it.
Cheers, man. Thank you.
Well, listen, stay safe and well, chaps.
Yeah,
and,
you do, mate. Hopefully we'll have a drink or something when it's all okay to do so.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. All right, so stay safe and well, yeah?
All right, mate. Love to the family, mate. Bye.
And you. Take care. Bye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Another great episode in the can.
Seven, mate. Seven down.
Yeah,
good one.
Great storyteller. Huh? Sorry.
No, he is. Again, I think it's a testament to another guest that kind of we're quiet throughout it quite a bit, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. It's less work for us, really, isn't it? I'm getting it. But I've got a new microphone and I'm a bit like, I don't know where to be. But yeah, it's he's a great storyteller, and he's a bit like I touched base on the intro. He's very much like he can get an audience around him without realizing that he's doing it, and sort of captivates the people that he's telling stories to. So yeah. Gotta imagine.
Go on. You go.
No, I forgot what I was gonna say.
I was just gonna say, obviously, for me, it was a strange one because like we touched on there, I don't drive, so you know, I'm like, but I guess it is that thing in it for every, you know, I don't know, but I can only speak for every, not for every lad, but for me, and I imagine every other lad, like when you are young, you see fast cars and you want them and all that, and then you either kind of like Dan did, you get that fast car and you write it off, or you go out of it, you know. Or you don't grow out of it, I guess. You don't write it off, you don't grow out of it, and you still have a fucking dead fast car.
Yeah, yeah, there is that, isn't there? Yeah, I've never really been into them. I mean, that, like I touched base on in the chat. I had the Audi A3, but I mean, that's not like a super car, is it? I mean, it was a nice car, but it was old. But yeah, it's never really been my thing, really. I remember Shimmy, Andrew Shim, for the people who don't know. He picked me up once in a Subaru when we was filming This Is England, and Shane absolutely bollocked him the day after because he picked me up in his Subaru
I've never been so scared in my life. It was an experience. So Shimmy's always been into fast cars, hasn't he? He's a bit of a motorhead. Would you call it a motorhead?
I think Shimmy's just a bit of an adrenaline junkie, isn't he? You know what I mean? He drives fast cars, fast motorbikes, gets in the cage with other men that like to hit him.
Mm. And plenty of other things that we shouldn't mention. Yeah, Shimmy's an adrenaline junkie, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely, man. Definitely. And
we need to get Shim on. We need to get Shimmy on here. We will. We will get him on.
Him down in his little van.
Yes.
So Danny's was brilliant. You know, the thing that got me is like he was talking there about the nostalgia of riding a bike. I've been on my bike quite a bit recently, like you say, with the lockdown and kind of riding with a friend and that. And it is.
I saw you was at the airport. That looks amazing.
Yeah, it was nice, man. We found this nice little spot. We've lived near the airport our whole entire lives.
Mm.
I found a spot the other day where you can walk to it, it's fine. It's like a all signposted, like a little, you know, them little naturey paths, you know, when you're walking.
Yeah, yeah.
Little wooden sign.
Mm.
So you basically sat on a bit of grass and you're probably about 500, 400 meters away from the runway.
Wow. So
when you sit there, the planes literally, they must only be about 40 feet above your head as they land.
That's amazing. Yeah, it looks good, that. Hey, when we're allowed, when it's all safe and safe to do so, I should put my bike on the back of the car and come to Manchester and we'll get something done.
Yeah, man.
Look, I'm well into biking at the minute. And like you said, it's like nostalgic, isn't it? Like, yeah. Me and Charlotte are loving it at the minute. That, yeah, and golf.
Same. I'm going to get Em's a bike and we're going to bike rides. It's going to be magical. So next week's guest.
Yeah.
Who are announced? Who are going to do it?
It's Big Tom. Big Tom Davies. He's on all of the comedy shows. And he's also the host now of Mock the Week. He's one of the hosts. Sorry, he's done... Yeah. Quite a few on there, yeah. Very familiar face. Murdering Successful was probably the biggest thing he's done, which was funny. It was great.
Yeah, yeah. So that'd be a good one. Like I say, Tom, we've known for years. We wanted him on. We were going to have Tom on as a live guest when we planned to.
Yeah, yeah. I forgot about. Oh, many moons ago.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that live didn't end up happening for a couple of reasons, but we managed to pin him down.
I mean, I wouldn't be able to pin him down. That'd be a job, wouldn't it? It'd take five men, that. I reckon more. Imagine a bouncer having to throw that man out of a pub.
You wouldn't, would you? If someone came up to you and went, throw Big Tom out of this club.
Remember when I first met him? He was in the toilets. We'll talk about all this on next week. All the good stories.
Teaser.
Huh?
Good, like, teaser.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, it wasn't really a great story. It was just, I remember when I first met him and kind of like turned my back and he was there and I just saw like the hips of a man at my heart, at my eye level. And I kind of had to look up and he's one of the biggest men I've ever met. He's got to be borderline giant, hasn't he, surely?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So more on that next week.
Yeah.
In the meantime, guys, do keep liking, sharing, reviewing, subscribing, all that bollocks. If you can get on the Patreon, we've had a couple of new signups, which is great, which then means that we can put some money to good causes, which we're going to do. Thank you very much. See you next week for Big Tom.
Yeah, thanks.